Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am 24. This is my podcast. Sorry, I was just listening to Sade. I didn't realize how good that song is. I mean, I knew how good of a song it was, but I was just like, man, I can't cut off Sade! We're back on spring break for me. Thank God I get a break. No, I'm just kidding. I felt fine. I'm feeling fine. Got a break. Got a week off from college. Going back next week, though. Pause the music. I'm conflicted about spring break. You know, it's just I talked about early on, you know, this year. I was like, man, I'm exhausted. I'm fatigued. I'm just fatigued. Right? You get it. I'm fatigued. I'm fatigued with school, fatigued with, like, all that good stuff. It's like, you know, I made it through half of the semester, and right now, all of my grades are sitting pretty at A's. All of them. Just straight up, straight A's. Except for one class that I have an 89 in, but we'll just round it up to an A. And so I got all these great, fantastic grades, and, you know, it's just like right after, pretty much midterms, last 2 weeks of school, I write an 8-page paper. I wrote last week a 4-page paper in like 6 hours. Studied for a test for Thursday. Thursday was my final day at school. Like, just a lot of intense stuff. And you know what? It's like, it's such a weird dynamic, right? It feels like I'm about to go on a long break, a long holiday, but I'm only just taking the week off. I don't get it. I really don't. It's weird. It's very, very weird. Anyways, play me some Sade. I'm getting some stuff done on the side as well. But we do have some stuff to talk about this week. Tomorrow, we'll talk about draft. We'll talk about offensive linemen. You know about the quarterbacks. You know about the wide receivers. It's a very important draft for offensive linemen. I'm going to try and get some more guys in. I'll talk about 5 players tomorrow. where they'll fit in the draft. Oh, hold on, this is the best part of the song. Anyways, again, best part of the song. Anyways, we'll talk about draft stuff tomorrow. Today, we'll kind of hit on free agency, where certain free agents will hit. We'll talk about Formula One and basketball. Ladies and gentlemen, all that coming up on the Smooth Sounds of 24's podcast. Sorry, it would have gone on for another 48 seconds, and we gotta go, we gotta go, we gotta go. So, I'll kind of preface the podcast, and I'll start off the podcast with Formula One. Second race weekend of the year. Of, I think it's like 22 races. Love Formula One, love the sport. New fan of the sport, love the sport. However, there is a glaring issue with Formula One. Huge issue. Glaring issue. Problematic issue. And that is that it is at this point, and really for the last 2 years? 3 years. Because this will be Max Verstappen's fourth championship. The sport is just uncompetitive. I mean, it's not like uncompetitive in the sense of, oh, the Patriots, they go to and win the Super Bowl every year, or every couple of years, like 3-4 years. No. That's not what I mean by uncompetitive. It would be like if the Patriots won every single game in the regular season except one or two, and then they would crush everyone in the playoffs. So they would be like near perfect every single year, and in the Super Bowl, they would just crush whoever they would be, by like two scores. They would just dominate them. That's the type of uncompetitiveness that I am talking about. Oh, and also imagine that the Patriots would also dominate for like 4 years. They would do that for like 4 years. That's essentially what's going on with Formula One. It's just uncompetitive. It's like we all know who's going to win the races. That's going to be Max Verstappen. There is no one that competes with him. Let me go on a little bit of a rant here. I kind of am already halfway in, but now I'm fully in. It's a huge issue when Max Verstappen, right, the regulations, right, they changed this year. The FIA, the governing body of Formula One, they changed the regulations this year. The regulations this year was, or is now, currently, that you can open up your DRS after one lap instead of two laps. Now, what is DRS and why is that important? DRS stands for drag reduction system. Basically, the rear wings are on the plane, right? So they have like a spoiler. The planes have like, not planes, Jesus Christ. The race cars have spoilers on the back that actively slow down the car, like intentionally, right? And so DRS, drag reduction system, is opening up that wing and giving the cars more speed. That's what the DRS stands for, DRS. That's why it's a very important system. It allows certain drivers the ability to overtake, to pass their opponents. It's a great system, important system, imperative system for passing. Passing is overtaking. And so you need to be within 1 second to essentially utilize the DRS. You can't just open it up whenever you feel like it. You have to be within catching distance of your opponent. Catching distance would be 1 second, or passing distance, or overtaking, or it's a regulation that FIA is, I don't know if it's arbitrary or not, but it's like you have to be within 1 second of your opponent to be able to open up the DRS and essentially gain like a burst of speed by like, what is it, 15, 20 kilometers, something like that. Here's the thing. Max Verstappen, opening lap, Crofty, the announcer, the play-by-play guy, essentially, says, lights out and away we go. The race starts. One lap passes. And by the way, the reason why, more likely than not, that the FIA introduced this new rule, because it used to be that you had to wait 2 laps to open up your DRS. But now it's 1 lap. Reason why they probably did that is because Max Verstappen takes those 2 laps to build up pretty much an insurmountable lead against his opponents, right? Because his race car is so much fucking better, and he's such an awesome driver, that he just takes off into the distance. In 2 laps. FIA is like, alright, we're changing that to constitute and catalyze more overtaking early on, and to give drivers a better opportunity to pass Max Verstappen. Do you want to know what happened within 1 lap? 1 lap that Max Verstappen had in the race. Do you want to know what happened? Do you want to try and take a guess at what happened? That motherfucker got 1.2 seconds in front of the closest driver. So Max, on the opening lap, was already outside of DRS! DRS! And so nobody caught him. I mean, I didn't see Max Verstappen for the entirety of the fucking race until the end, and that was because he was about to lap the cars that were at the back of the pack. He absolutely dominated the race. And look, I like Max as a driver a lot. He's great at what he does. I love and root for greatness. I love it. But at the exact same time, I will not root for uncompetitiveness. It's ridiculous. Nobody's competing against Max. Third year in a row. We'll talk about Mercedes in a little bit. But it's like Sergio Perez. I thought this time last year, I was like, maybe Sergio can challenge Max Verstappen. Wrong. Last year, I was wrong. This year, I'm even more wrong. And now it's like Sergio Perez kind of gets it. He gets it, and Red Bull gets it in the sense of Sergio and his job. Hold on, I got a burp. Excuse me. Sergio's job is supposed to support Max Verstappen. That is his job. That is what he is supposed to do. And so Sergio, I mean, as long as Red Bull is finishing 1-2, which everybody knew and thought they could have and should have finished 1-2 in every single race last year, now that nightmare is happening. And it's affecting viewership. Ratings were down 40% last year. Granted, the race was happened on a Saturday, and it didn't happen on ESPN's main channel, but 40% viewership loss is a huge, huge loss. I don't really know what else to say. It's like, we're going to have to wait for the new regulations, because apparently the 2024 car will pretty much be the 2025 car, because everybody next year will try and get a jump on the 2026 regulations. And so Max will probably be a 5-time world champion before we get another team being able to challenge Max Verstappen. It appears right now that the only team that can challenge Max Verstappen and ruin Red Bull's dominance is Red Bull. Because Red Bull has a bunch of dysfunction going on within the organization. There's sexual, misconduct allegations against the team principal or the CEO of the organization. Essentially, he's the guy that runs the show, and Christian Horner. And then Red Bull, weirdly enough, suspends the woman that makes the allegations. After there was a dossier of information that was leaked to the journalists and team principals. And then it's like you have Max Verstappen's father saying, like, Christian Horner is about to be out. Christian Horner is about to lose his job. You have key guys at Red Bull that Max Verstappen is loyal to, apparently wanting to leave, or they're going to be ousted, or whatever the case may be. And then you hear these rumors that Max Verstappen could go to the rival, the team that he has hated for years, the team that Red Bull hates the most and loves making fun of in Mercedes, because Lewis Hamilton is going to leave Mercedes at the end of this year and join Ferrari. More on that in a little bit. But Max Verstappen has completely made, really, a new favorite sport of mine kind of boring to watch. I mean, I love waking up early in the morning, watching the races. Love watching the races. But it's like, Jesus fucking Christ. The races are just uncompetitive. I don't even remember the gap that he had over the competition at the end of the race. It did not matter. Qualifying, he's qualified these last two races on pole. He's won these last two races. The first two races of the season. It has been a uncompetitive slop of a season. Again, when Lewis Hamilton had his dominance in Mercedes in the 2010s, I think he won 5 world championships with Mercedes and then one additional. Oh, no, he won. My bad. Because I was like, he won 6 championships. I thought he was a 6-time. He's a 7-time world champion. My bad. But when Lewis won all those championships with Mercedes, wasn't that long ago. It was like 4 years ago. But when he did win all those championships with Mercedes, Lewis had competition. Maybe not at the end with the W13, which is like one of the greatest race cars on the not on the planet, but ever crafted and ever created. But when Lewis was winning all those championships, Lewis, again, outside of the 2020 season, had competition. 2019, it was against like Ferrari and Mercedes for a little bit, because Ferrari had done some stuff with their engine that gave them more horsepower. So I think it was like, I mean, clear cut in a way, they had at times a better car than Mercedes. And so Lewis had some pushback back then. Obviously, the infamous battle with Nico Rosberg as well. Like, Lewis has had challengers, whether it's teams like Ferrari or at times Red Bull, or even his own teammates like Nico Rosberg. Not really Valtteri Bottas. Bottas? I say Bottas. It's hard to say his first name, Valtteri. I feel like I'm saying that name wrong. Valtteri Bottas? Is it Bottas? I don't know. I'm American. I'm not bilingual. But Lewis has had competition. Max doesn't have any competition. Every single team cannot extract the performance out of their race car that not only Red Bull can with their car, but that Max Verstappen can with his. Speaking of which, let's go to Mercedes, and we'll finish Formula One with Mercedes. There won't be another race, I think, for another 2 to 3 weeks. Essentially, there's a race every 2 weeks, except in April, when they essentially take like a spring break, and then in August, when they take like a summer break. Those 2 months, it's like pretty much, I think there's going to be a race at the beginning of the month and then at the end of the month, and then they have like 3 weeks where they do nothing. But Mercedes, Lewis Hamilton's team, who has continuously tried and failed to get their car concept right, has once again tried and failed to get their car concept right. The concept that they are trying to get right is this ground effect car, where essentially the floor of the car gets sucked into the ground, creating more downforce, so that way you can have better control over the car when you're going into turns. Kind of it. It's essentially it, but it's a little bit more to it. Hold on.
Hold on. I'm reading something really fast. Okay, sorry about that. I was just making sure something wasn't going on. Anyways, hold on. Let me... I am so confused. Okay, is Beyonce's newest album called Cowboy Carter? Is that what it's called? That's what I was reading. I don't know. I'm so confused. Is it a single or is it like, is it Act Two? Dude, I don't understand it. I'm very confused. That's what I was reading. I was reading like this press release by Beyonce a couple of years ago when she released the first Renaissance and it apparently got leaked. And I was like, I'm confused. Is Cowboy Carter the name? I mean, it's $40, so I would assume so. I think so. I don't know. I don't like the album cover. It's just, it's boring. It's bland. Limited edition cover. I want some sauce, you know? It's just Act Two, Cowboy Carter. That's it. There's no, you know, I don't get to see, you know, Beyonce looking good. I guess that's the album cover, but I don't know. Sorry. Gosh. I was just curious about Beyonce's newest stuff. Going back to what I was talking about with Formula One. So, Formula One, infamous team Mercedes, one of the best teams in racing, cannot get their car concept correct. It's affecting the team's ability to compete, et cetera, et cetera, all that good stuff. And Lewis Hamilton is not happy. He has made it be known that he is not happy. And I thought there was something very curious about Mercedes a couple months ago. So what happened a couple months ago was that Lewis Hamilton announces that he is leaving Mercedes for Ferrari at the end of the year. And my first thought was, holy shit, what is wrong with this car? Because he had essentially, I think, until the summer to make a decision. And he made a decision in February. Literally, like a week or two, or it could have even been January. Like, it was a week or two before the new car was unveiled. And so I was like, oh my God, what is wrong with this car? Well, apparently, the more things that change, the more things stay the same because the Mercedes car still porpoises or bounces. And you could see it all throughout race weekend. You could see it all throughout the race itself. You could see it with the timing and the performance of the Mercedes from George Russell and Lewis Hamilton. They both were struggling with the car. It's just that Lewis has been a lot more vocal about the performance of the car because he's raced and driven cars that are world championship cars. And Lewis in Drive to Survive, which I've still not seen and I probably will not see, Lewis has been very vocal about the performance of the car and his displeasure with the car in the sense and in the context of they, being Mercedes, the engineers, did not listen to his suggestions over and over and over again when he talked about the car, and they didn't make the proper changes to the car that he made, and he's frustrated because they are still one of the only teams to struggle with this problem, with porpoising, with bouncing, whatever you want to call it. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, porpoising / bouncing, it's essentially the car's tendency to literally like rise up and down. Like I talked about earlier, how ground effect, the car gets sucked into the ground, right? And it makes essentially their ability to like, it generates more downforce, so it makes it easier to turn and stuff like that. The problem is, Mercedes's car doesn't get sucked all the way into the ground. And so, and then it like releases all of the pressure or whatever back up into the air. So it goes down and then goes up again, then goes down and then up. And it does it really, really fast. So it looks like bouncing. It's just the car's tendency to like try to suck itself into the ground, but it can't for some weird reason, and then it like pushes itself back up, and then it gets, and then it tries to suck itself back down again. They are horrendous at high speeds. Like, horrendous at high speeds. Like, Lewis was fighting with both McLarens. He was fighting with Piastri to try and keep Piastri behind. And inevitably, Piastri got ahead. Mercedes took him out and stuck him out on used tires, and they pitted George Russell on fresher, better tires. For some reason, Mercedes still cannot land these safety car concepts. But Mercedes did it. They tried to run two different strategies, which, all right, fine. Why not put George Russell on a strategy? Why not fuck up his race? I don't know. Every now and again, instead of your all-star driver. Regardless. They pit George Russell. They leave Lewis Hamilton out. Lewis is being attacked by Oscar Piastri on better tires. There's really not a lot that he can do about it. He defended immaculately as best as he possibly could, but he, like, I think 10, 15 laps into it, he got overtaken by Oscar Piastri. There wasn't really anything he could do about it. Then he's fighting to overtake the McLaren of Lando Norris because he's trying to, like, he's trying to gain places because he's in a race. And he gains a lot of time on slow speed and medium speed corners, but at high speeds, the car completely falls apart and he loses all of his advantage against the McLaren of Lando Norris. And he cannot pass Lando Norris in the race because of that fact, because of the deficit that he generates whenever he is racing against, or not even racing, but whenever he is driving in these high-speed areas. It's why he couldn't pass Lando Norris at the end of the race. And so Mercedes, which was one of the top contenders, one of the top teams in Formula One, they will now have to look for the 2026 year, or the 2026 car, excuse me, and hope that that car can challenge Red Bull, Ferrari. I mean, right now, they're like the third or the fourth team right now. Excuse me, they are the fourth team. It's like it's Red Bull, Ferrari, and then McLaren, that's better. And then, like, because Lance Stroll is such an awful driver because his dad bought the team, and he essentially, because his dad bought the team, of course, he's going to have his son racing. Lando isn't as terrible as the Russian horrifying driver and horrible person in Nikita Mazepin, but Lando Norris is, or not Lando, damn it, not Lando. They both have the suffix, or I guess prefix, L-A-N, but Lance Stroll, the Aston Martin driver, if he wasn't so bad at his job, it would be very clear. I mean, I think it's clear, based off of Fernando Alonso's performance, that Aston Martin is a better race car, or has a better race car than Mercedes. So it's like Mercedes was like the second place team in regards to points in Formula One last season, and now they're like the fourth. So they haven't gotten better, they've gotten worse. And they kind of just have to wave the white flag and be like, look, this car is going to suck. There's not really a lot that we can do about it. There's really, in my opinion, if you're somebody who wants competition, there really isn't a reason to watch Formula One right now. It is so uncompetitive. And it is just that every single team has just not figured out this car concept. And it is horrendously boring to watch if you don't like Max Verstappen or some of the middle of the pack battles or whatever. I remember, like, at the end of the race, the broadcast kind of knew that Max was just going to win. So they were just like, yeah, we're barely going to show Max on screen because it's just like, we kind of want to watch something interesting. So they showed the battle with Lewis and Lando and some of the back of the pack, like Kevin Magnussen essentially ruining like five drivers' races because of penalties. It was fun. Like, as somebody who likes racing, it was fun to watch the event, but it was also fucking horrendous because there is so much competition, right? There is so much competition. Back of the pack, middle of the pack, front of the pack, there's none. Like, two areas that you really, like, I don't really care that much about. I care about who's going to win the race. I think everybody, every casual fan is, and I consider myself kind of to be a casual fan. But I do want more competition, and there just is not whatsoever. unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on which side of the aisle that you lean on, because I'm pretty sure there's not only a lot of Red Bull fans that are juiced up about Max Verstappen having zero competition, but also everyone else who is a Max Verstappen fan. So that's like easily the entire country that speaks Dutch. I don't know which one it is. It's the Netherlands, right? It's the Netherlands, I think. But the Dutch, they love Max. Of course they do, because he's fucking killing people right now. Again, which I love and respect. I love that Max is winning races. It's just, there's just no competition. It would be different if he was fighting with Charles Leclerc or Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri or Fernando Alonso or Lewis Hamilton or whomever. Like, it would be different if he was like, woof, man, like, I mean, he got the advantage. He overtook whoever in the final, like, three laps, and he was able to build up a lead, and he defended well. Like, he has done none of that for, like, 3 years. Or 2 years, really. He's done none of that. And this will probably be the third year that he will just not have. Like, we won't watch Max drive and compete and defend and attack against a driver. At least in my opinion. It just doesn't feel like that, like anything will change whatsoever. So, that's kind of my spiel on Formula One right now. I probably will talk about it on and off because I still like the sport. I'm still interested in the sport, but I was so excited for it, and it's just so uninteresting if you aren't interested in it. It's different from like football, right? Because it's like people can watch the Super Bowl, people can watch the game and not really know what's going on, or basketball. They can watch it and be like, oh, okay, this is kind of an interesting sport. There's some competition. There's none in Formula One. Anyways, should I talk about this for like 5 seconds? No, I'm not going to. I was going to talk about constant reports of Nick Saban talking about how the reason why he retired from football is because he hates, I mean, I'll talk about it. He hates the NIL, and he's like, he feels like football, especially college football, is dictated by essentially who has the biggest paycheck. And I would kind of disagree, and I would kind of agree, right? Like, A&M spent a lot of money on its NIL program, and that has not worked at all. Like, A&M is still A&M. However, I will agree with him, and I'll say this, like, yeah, like, it's kind of obvious. Like for me, I'll say NIL money isn't money. It, like, that doesn't make any sense. Let me back up. NIL represents funding, not money, but funding. And schools with great funding have the chance and the opportunity to win championships. Like, we can all agree on that. And so I don't perceive NIL as like, hey, we're paying players to come to our school to go and play for us. I see NIL as just more funding, except the funding now directly goes to the players' pockets. Johnny Manziel has been very lucid in his not necessarily criticism, but kind of just like his just blatant, just objective approach to talking about football, specifically college football, and the business that college football is. And it is a business, and I'm not naive to it. College football is one of the most hypocritical, obnoxious sports I've ever seen in my entire life. Nick Saban, who I love. I love Coach Saban. Love Nick Saban. Roll Tide, roll. But Nick Saban saying that he's like tired of it, and he's tired of, like, I remember there is this quote from an insider that said that his wife, everybody calls her Miss Tracy, his wife said that, like, why are we even doing this anymore? The kids only care about making money. And I was like, why do you think kids go to Alabama? Why do you think you get the top prospects going to Alabama? Because it for damn sure is not because Alabama is a good fucking school. It's because Alabama, I mean, it's a great party school. It's because Alabama has a fucking awesome football program, and it'll help these prospects, these kids, have increased odds of being a professional football player. Like, the league is just made up of kids from Alabama. It's ridiculous. It makes, like, I just saw Landon Dickerson just got paid a bajillion buku amounts of bucks. And Landon was the center for Alabama during that 2020 season where they absolutely smashed Ohio State in the college football championship. It's like, what do you mean? Landon intelligently went to Alabama. It increased his notoriety. He gets drafted by the Eagles in the second round. They put him at guard. I loved him at center and at guard. And now he's one of the top guards, one of the top paid offensive linemen in the NFL. Full stop. Great, great job, Landon. Love you, Landon. Even though you're an Eagle, I still love Landon Dickerson. Here's the thing. Tore his ACL, too. Tore his ACL. So happy for the guy. Love Landon. Here's the thing. I'm somebody who's realistic, and Johnny has talked about how college athletes get paid. It's very under the table, underhanded stuff. Go back 5-6 years ago, right? Baker Mayfield is not from a lot of money. How the hell is he in a multi-million dollar mansion or a $100,000 mansion? He even said, I'm not from money. How the hell does he end up in a $100,000 mansion watching the fucking draft? Same thing goes for any of these other guys. Like, you'll see them with these, like, expensive, like, Dolce & Gabbana, Gucci, Yves Saint Laurent, you know, Patek Philippe. They'll wear designer, designer on designer on designer, watches, jewelry, suits, clothing, etc. You know, glasses. They'll get iced out glasses. How the fuck are these guys paying for this shit when their parents have lived below the poverty line all their fucking lives? How does that happen? It's something that frustrates me. It's like it's literally happening in people's faces. In their faces. And they're like, we don't want to pay players. And I'm just like, you're already paying the players. It's just with more steps. Now, it's with less steps, but it's still a lot of steps. It's not like the school hands out the money. It's that the boosters who fund the schools hand out the money. What's the problem? It's already happening. Johnny, again, very lucid, very truthful, very honest. I trust Johnny more than I trust anybody else because he's been very, very truthful on his status in life and with his decisions that he's made. He's very truthful. To a point where he is self-deprecating. So Johnny talks about how his father, and he didn't know about this, his father had went to A&M and asked them for like $5 million. Because Johnny was going to go out of college his sophomore year, infamously, and go to the NFL. So his father asked for $5 million from A&M. The coach, Coach Sumlin at the time, he laughs off the deal. And when I'm hearing this interaction, because again, Johnny's on Shannon Sharp's podcast, when I'm hearing this interaction, I was like, Coach Sumlin, first and foremost, moron, idiot. But more importantly than that, I was like, $5 million to all the fucking boosters and A&M? Chump change. And let me tell you something. If it was known more widely and more broadly, again, Johnny's father was making the deal. Johnny had no idea. It's like he would have to convince Johnny of it. But you cannot convince me that if some of the powerful boosters at A&M knew that Johnny Manziel would come back and play for the college for $5 million, you cannot convince me that they wouldn't have sprinted to the bank like the fat guy on the cover of Monopoly, and literally, like a cartoon character, ran to Johnny Manziel's house with money bags, with tins of money bags, or however much money you can fit in those money bags. I don't know how much money you can fit in money bags. I think it's absurd that Nick Saban goes out and talks about it. He's either naive or he just ignores that that's a part of the game. because it is a part of the game. How else do you think that all those damn Alabama Crimson Tide Roll Tide championships gotten championship cases? Wasn't because Alabama lacked funding. How else do you think you were able to build hundreds of millions of dollars worth of training facilities at Alabama? How do you think so? If I go to certain colleges in the state of Alabama, not just in Tuscaloosa, but in the state of Alabama, and I take their athletes on a tour of your college football program, you would have to duct tape their jaws shut because they would be hanging on the damn floor in astonishment at how much funding Alabama's football program gets. And again, I love greatness. I love winning. I'm not hating on Alabama for making the sacrifices that it needed to win, to get the money and the funding that they needed to win. Not hating on them for that. And I'm certainly not hating on Nick Saban for doing what it takes to win. Not hating on him. Not even. I love Nick Saban. But I cannot co-sign this ridiculous notion that the NIL has changed college football. Because A, it hasn't. B, the only thing that has changed is the reality that college football playoffs, actually can get some money. But look who was in the college football playoffs yet again. Alabama, Michigan, now it's Washington because Washington has a good team, and Texas. You got three teams, Michigan, Texas, or UT as it's called in Texas, Michigan, Texas, and Alabama, all are like three of the biggest schools when it comes to boosters. Don't fucking lie. This is college football. It's big money business. Except now you have to pay your players through your boosters. Which they kind of were doing to begin with. So, let's talk about free agency here. Let's talk about it a little bit. It's hard for me to kind of... Free agency is interesting. It's interesting because certain people will deny what is right in front of them. Certain people, not me, of course. And so I'll watch people talk to me about free agency and they'll either downplay the significance of it or they don't care about it, or they'll talk to me about how the draft is insignificant and free agency is significant and all that good stuff. I thought that this year's free agency class was very interesting. It's very interesting because you have a lot of top-tier running backs get cut and traded. You had Chris Jones leave Kansas City, right? Didn't get tagged by Kansas City. So I'm like, okay, he's leaving. And a lot of turnover, right? Kirk Cousins leaving, potentially. Chicago needing to trade away Justin Fields. Great year for free agency. And it kind of just feels like there really hasn't been a move or a group of moves for me that has moved the needle on any of these teams. And I'll start with a team that nobody's kind of talking about, but I've liked a lot of their moves, and it's not just because they got a lot of Dallas Cowboys. It's just like, it just feels like they've gotten incrementally better. Like, at first, it's like they were terrible and one of the worst teams in football, as evident by their draft position at number 2 overall, but they've also gotten better incrementally. They've made depth pieces, they've made moves to get more depth pieces, potentially starters, because Washington doesn't really have a lot of players. And that's the team that I'm talking about. I'm talking about Washington, right? They go out and they get one of Dallas's better and really best pass rushers and kind of flex players in Dorrance Armstrong, right? He's really, really good. Last two seasons at Dallas, 7.5 sacks, 8.5 sacks. You'll take that in a dab of ranch. You love that. You love to see it. Really had his kind of his renaissance with Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn is the head coach of Washington. That's the connection. They got Dante Fowler, Dorrance Armstrong, and the center for Dallas in Tyler Biotish. And so they get like average to good players. I think Dorrance Armstrong's a good player. They get like average to good player, average to good player, average to good player, average to good player, average to good player. And instead of being like, oh my God, these guys are bad, these guys are terrible, now it's like, oh, okay, they actually get guys that actually kind of matter to Dallas. And one of Dallas's strengths was their was their defensive line being so deep with talent. And now it's like they get all these guys that Dallas used to have, but now they don't. And now it's like their team overall, to me, is better. Way better, actually, as a matter of fact. And it's like you add in some more pieces, you get another offensive lineman here and there, and it's like you go from being one of the worst teams in the NFL to like average, potentially, depending on who they utilize. Depending on who they get with that second that second overall pick. We'll see what happens there. But like overall, I was like, man, I don't like the Dan Quinn pickup at head coach for the Commanders. But then it's just like, huh, they've made some really, really, really good moves. Really good moves that I've liked. Let me kind of flip the coin here, and then we'll kind of talk ad nauseum about kind of how non-needle moving a lot of the moves this free agency cycle have been. Let me talk about the worst team in free agency, without a shadow of a doubt. Worst team. Uncontested. Uncontestable. That's the Minnesota Vikings. I don't know what the hell their plan is. Can somebody explain to me what Minnesota's plan is? Because I don't get it. I don't get it. If the plan was and is, hey guys, we're going to lose all of our top tier talent. We're not going to replace any of it. We're going to piss off our star wide receiver. And we're going to like essentially throw away this next year and kind of hope and pray that we can trade up in the draft or potentially, you know what I like right now? I like trading for Justin Fields. I'll talk about that in a second. But it's like this football team, the Minnesota Vikings, has lost Kirk Cousins for free. They've lost Danielle Hunter, who checks the numbers. Had 16.5 sacks last season. I have no idea why they just said, nope, 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 we don't want him on a bad team. We don't want him. He's had, since 2018, he didn't play in the 2020 season, but since 2018, for 5 seasons, he's had 4 of them be double-digit sack seasons. I don't understand it. I don't get it. And I've been beating my head against the wall for the better part of half a decade on Danielle Hunter. I don't understand how he is so like disrespected within the organization. He's been their best defensive player for the better part of half a decade. They're like, nope, we don't want him. We're not even going to sign him to a freaking, a short-term deal. It's like, who's your pass rush? Who's your pass rusher? They go out and they get Aaron Jones. He's, a good back. I still think he has some juice left in him, but I'm not, like, juiced up on Aaron Jones. Honestly, I probably would have preferred them being a little bit more aggressive in going after Josh Jacobs or Saquon Barkley. But hey, that's their prerogative. That's what they want to do. And then the creme de la creme, worst move of the year for them is Kirk Cousins going to Atlanta and getting buku amounts of bucks. And I've talked about it for weeks, folks. And I was like, are they going to get it done with Kirk Cousins? How are they not? I got a cough. Hold on. How are they going to have a quarterback in 2024 and long term? They're completely out of the range for draft, for drafting. They're going to have to give up a lot of assets to move up into the draft. And at that point, and I remember there was like rumors for like half a second that Justin Jefferson might be traded. And I was like, I believe those rumors because the Vikings have done this shit before. They have a top tier wide receiver. They've paired that top tier wide receiver, or not even paired really, but they have that top tier wide receiver. They had at one point, Chris Carter, Randy Moss. They moved off of Chris for Randy. Then they were like, oh, Randy, we're moving off of you now. Then they were like, we have Stephon Diggs. Oh, wait, now we don't, because we're trading away Stephon Diggs to the Buffalo Bills. And then they were like, oh, wait, we have Justin Jefferson. Now we also have Jordan Addison, who's on a rookie deal, and it's his second year in the league. And you know what they're probably going to do? They're kind of like the guy that doesn't learn his lesson, right? He freaking cheats on, like, his wife every single fucking time, right? They divorce. He marries the girl that he cheats on her with. They divorce because he cheats, because he's a cheater. Like, this has been the process for the Minnesota Vikings for the last 20 years. They've had some of the best wide receivers in the history of the sport. They cannot freaking commit to them. It is mind-boggling. And I love that Justin Jefferson asked, hey, what's the plan here? What's the situation at quarterback? And now we know. It's no more Kirk Cousins. And was Justin juiced up about Kirk Cousins? Probably not, no. But at the exact same time, he's like, at least I kind of know what I'm getting. And if I check Justin Jefferson's numbers here real quick, what Justin Jefferson was getting with Kirk Cousins was, as I pull up his numbers, last season when he was banged up and hurt, 1,000 yards. Season before that, 1,800 yards. Season before that, 1,600 yards. Kirk Cousins isn't really a top-tier, top-flight, great quarterback, but he's reliable enough to throw the football to Justin Fields 108 times in 2021, 128 times in 2022, and again, because Justin Jefferson was hurt, threw the ball 68 times, got it for 1,000 yards, 5 tutties. You know what you get. You know what you get. Minnesota has... I remember I said this about the Broncos. I said, oh, the Broncos, they're done. You know, oh, by the way, the Broncos, they also cut their top-tier safety in Justin Simmons, who apparently is going to probably sign with... are looking at signing Justin Jefferson. Or not... There's so many Justins in the NFL. Justin Simmons. They're looking at signing Justin Simmons. You want to know what? Sorry, I was getting a little bit ahead of myself. I was going to go back to talking about the Minnesota Vikings, but I also wanted to kind of like parlay for a little bit. Not parlay, but deviate for a little bit and talk about the Broncos. And I said, like, look, I feel like the Broncos are 5 years behind. Like, they don't have a first-round draft pick and a great quarterback draft class. They don't have the ability to go out and replenish certain their coffers, so to speak, at that position. And, I mean, they couldn't go out and get Russell Wilson. They're hamstrung cap-wise. They are up Schitt's Creek without a paddle. And I was like, it's going to take them 5 years to fix it. I think something similar is going to happen to the Minnesota Vikings. It's going to take them 5 years to fix this. And I said something interesting. I said, like, not even said something, but I never really liked the GM, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, because he didn't get it. He didn't understand it. And I get it. He's in a difficult situation. He's in a difficult spot. And it's because he inherited a team that kind of wanted to get rid of Kirk Cousins, and now they're on the war path to getting rid of Kirk Cousins. And I feel sorry for him in some ways, because I feel like he inherited that problem. How can we get rid of Kirk Cousins? And he has now kind of that pathway, and that pathway is, what, we're going to get rid of Kirk by just releasing him. And that ostracizes Justin because he's like, I want to be aware of what's going on because I don't want to have to go into next season being like, who is my quarterback or can my quarterback get the job done? And now his quarterback is Saquon Barkley. Or not Saquon Barkley. It would maybe be better if it was. Now it's Sam Darnold. And so Justin Jefferson needs a contract. We'll see what happens there. Kwesi Adofo-Mensah did not really like his GMing for the last couple of years because it feels like it's just, we're just going to unload all of our contracts. We're going to get rid of all of our good players, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to move on from a lot of these guys and we're going to replenish them with certain players. And then when you ask the obvious question, who are you replenishing these players with? They kind of start saying, a lot. So I myself have had it with the Minnesota Vikings. They need a lot of help, and they just aren't very good at doing normal things. Now, I'll talk about free agency here and kind of what free agency has been over the last 2 days, because it only has been 2 days. Free agency has been a whole lot of, like, meh. I haven't really seen a move or a group of moves that I've been like, oh, wow, that moves the needle for that team. Outside of the Commanders where I'm like, oh, they're not awful anymore. They're actually getting some really nice players, some really good players. We'll kind of see. Again, they really need to, like, they've gotten Tyler Biadasz, the center from the Cowboys, who I was kind of like, I was kind of hoping that the Cowboys wouldn't extend him, and they didn't, and they were obvious. They were like, yeah, we're moving on. He's not very, like, he is spotty at best. So now Dallas will either have to get somebody in free agency or get somebody in the draft, and I'll look through that in a little bit. But there probably isn't anyone that they can get in free agency. But also, they kind of have another guy that they can utilize at center and all that good stuff, but whatever. Anyways, Washington is getting moves to make them go from being the worst to, like, below average to average, which I'm like, oh, okay, I'm fine with that. I haven't really seen any team that's moved the needle for me really one way or the other. It's been a whole lot of, again, meh. And kind of, like, at the top of that list has been Saquon Barkley to the Eagles. It's a nice, shiny move. It's a nice, shiny, like, very, very big name move for that team, for that organization. But let me tell you something. It doesn't really matter that much in the grand scheme of things. Nick Wright has kind of been on it, and he's been spot on in regards to this for the better part of, like, a day or two. When it comes to this, like, some people think that, like, the sky is falling, like Tiki Barber when it comes to Saquon Barkley. Let me find that clip. Tiki Barber, again, not really that smart of a guy, not really that great of a broadcaster. The fact that I don't even know what he, like, what the quote, I know what the quote was, but I actually didn't see the quote is kind of ridiculous, like, on Twitter itself. Hold on. Where is it? Is this it? I can't hear anything. What is going on here? Why can't I hear anything? Is it just muted? Why is there no audio? There we go. I was like, why can't I hear anything? Okay, here's the thing, right? Here's I think the New York Post has it or some, I don't know. Sorry for the squeaking, but here's the quote from Tiki Barber. Here it is.
I've been retired for 17 years, 18 years. I am now in the media. The fact that my emotional reaction responding to you going to the Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh, okay. So this is Tiki Barber's reaction to Saquon Barkley's reaction to Tiki Barber's reaction to Saquon Barkley going to the Eagles. I'll let it play on.
Which is, by the way, the voice of a lot of Giants fans. I'd say the majority of Giants fans. And you're going to come back and talk about something from 17 years ago that you don't even understand or misrepresenting? That's fine. Be that way then. I like Saquon Barkley. By the way, saying dead to me was basically tongue-in-cheek, but it is what it is. Get offended. Not sure what he's talking about. Now, if he's going to pull this, I'm gone now, hate me if you want to, fine. We'll hate you, right? You're not talking to me because I don't care. I've been retired for a long time, almost 50 years old.
You didn't need
I know what my legacy is with the New York Giants. I'm pretty sure I was a Giant for life.
Do you think your legacy with the New York Giants is better than Saquon Barkley's?
Do I need to answer that?
And let me address something really fast. So Tiki Barber, hey, buddy, could you not be a fucking fan for is this it? I'm trying to fucking find the clip, but I cannot fucking find it at all. Hold on, let me
Saquon Barkley signed day 3 year.
No, I'm looking up all of these shorts. I can't fucking find this thing. Hold on. Let me
And Saquon has already taken to Twitter himself to say thank you to everyone who's shown me love and support over the past.
Let me pause this and let me give you my reaction to a bunch of reactions, right? If anyone from the New York Giants, especially and specifically Dumb Dumb Tiki Barber, is going to be all pissy about Saquon Barkley going from your football team, the New York Giants, to a team that will instantly make him a better football player because guess fucking what? They have better run blocking, significantly better run blocking than your team. Then you have only yourself to be mad at because your football team didn't pay him for the last 2 years. It's not like Saquon Barkley asked out of his contract and then was like, I'm going to pursue a team in free agency. And it's like, no, you didn't pay him for the last 2 years. You infamously decided to pay your shitty quarterback before paying the guy that got you to the playoffs. And by the way, I wouldn't have paid either one of them because Saquon is hurt all the fucking time, and Daniel Jones is a schmuck. That's why I wouldn't have paid either one of them. But hey, you didn't have any fucking options because you're a bad organization and a bad team. And so you're stuck making a bad decision, whether it's paying Saquon and moving on from Daniel Jones, doing what they did, and that was paying Daniel Jones and moving on from Saquon, or really going scorched earth, going bare Rubicon on both of them and freaking saying, you know what? We're not paying either one of you and we're going to move on from both of you and we're going to save some money and we're going to draft a quarterback and we're going to freaking, we're going to try and get Caleb Williams or somebody else. But this whole notion that, I don't even think anyone even believes what Tiki Barber is saying. You know what I mean? He's like, I speak for a lot of Giants fans. And it's just like, well, if you speak for a lot of Giants fans, sorry, not sorry, a lot of Giants fans are morons.
6 years, forever grateful, excited for the next chapter, blue heart emoji, peace.
Okay, right. Blue heart emoji.
He's dead to us now.
Yeah, say it.
He's dead to us.
Because he won't say it.
He literally said it. You literally, you fucking idiot. I hate Tiki Barber so much. He's like, you're dead to us. You're literally dead to us.
And
I got to play it again.
He's already taken to Twitter himself to say thank you to everyone who's shown me love and support over the past 6 years. Forever grateful. Excited for the next chapter. Blue heart emoji. Peace.
Okay. Right. Blue heart emoji.
He's dead to us now.
Yeah, say it.
He's dead to us.
Because he won't say it.
You're dead to us, Saquon. Good luck. You're dead to me.
That's tongue in cheek.
Saquon has already taken to Twitter himself.
It doesn't sound tongue in cheek, first and foremost. I hate it when people try and rewrite history and they're like, I said that tongue-in-cheek, and it's just like, that didn't sound tongue-in-cheek to me. It didn't. Sound like you meant it. It sounded like you were a little bit salty, you know what I mean? It sounded like you were like a scorned lover. You know, Saquon Barkley has leveled up his game. It's like, you broke up with him. You broke up with him. He found someone or something better, and now, like a scorned ex-lover, you're hating. That's what's going on. You're just hating on another dude's game. And I am not here for player hating. I'm not here for it. Not here. But yes, what a surprise. Tiki Barber, among other things, is a player hater. But yes, God, I had to talk about that because everybody's been talking about it. Because this is like the only thing that Tiki Barber is known for. Just on top of on top of just being like, what happened? What was the reference? Saquon, hold on. Saquon was referencing something, but what was the reference? I'm guessing Tiki Barber. Hold on. If he's a professional football player, so I'm guessing he cheated on his wife or something like that, or did something. Because Saquon is Saquon in a tweet, he said like you're talking about loyalty. That's rich. Hold on, let me Google this. Yep. Yep. Ah, God. I mean, I'm so... Holy shit, you dumb motherfucker. Okay, you really can't be talking about fucking loyalty if you're... This happened 14 years ago. Okay, like, numbnuts. I love Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley, by the way, I think he married his high school sweetheart or this girl that he got pregnant in high school, right? Let me Google this. Or he's with her. Hold on, let me just Google this really fast. By the way, I hate how many guys are in the media who have had, like, stories like this, who have, like, cheated on their wives or whatever, and they're just, like, and they just do, like, the most, like, the worst fucking thing on the planet. So, no, he's not married to his partner. Hold on, let me Google this. Let me Google his wife. Is he married? Yeah, he's been dating his girlfriend since 2017. Hold on, I'll go on People Magazine right now. Da, 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 da. So they met in college. Yeah, so Saquon met his, I thought she was his high school sweetheart, because I knew when he was drafted that he had like a son or a daughter. Don't ask me how I know these things. But Saquon comes into the draft. He's already a dad, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just like, oh, okay. You know, like, and I heard that he had already, like, dated or was in that, was like, was going to be married to this girl that he was dating. And so Saquon, I don't know if he married or if, I don't know if they're married. I don't know that. I'm on People. It doesn't say that they're married. Regardless, he's like, he's been legit, and he's been, like, true with this girl since college, right? This is, okay, I can't fucking stand this motherfucker, Tiki Barber, now. Like, because Saquon holds his girl down, holds the fam down, is loyal, is honest. There's not, you want to know that I fucking hate? I hate a fucking rat, okay? Someone who's disloyal, who's fucking dishonest, who's a fucking idiot who will betray the fam at any cost. Let me read you. So, Saquon Barkley, right? Dates a girl that he meets in college, gets said girl pregnant, is still with that girl after like 7 years of being together. I kind of am wondering why aren't they married? But regardless, right? They're still together. They still like do things together. They're a couple, right? As far as I know, Saquon hasn't done some dumbass shit like Tiki Barber. Let me read you what Tiki Barber has done. Let me read you this shit. So this is an article that was posted about 2 years ago in 2022. And so Tiki Barber was previously married to Virginia Shaw or Cha in 1999. They went on to welcome 4 children. Son AJ in 2002, son Chasen in 2004, and twin daughters, Riley and Ella in 2010. Keep in mind, 2010, super important date, right? 1 month before their baby girl's arrival, news broke in April 2010 that the NFL player and his then wife were separating. It was later revealed that Barber had an affair with Johnson, his current wife, who was an NBC intern while he was working at the Today Show! Oh my God. And then this dum-dum. You want to know what he says? I hate, because again, right? Some once a fucking rat, always a fucking rat, right? This is what he said. This is what he said after. He said, I didn't want to interact with people on the aftermath of the relationship drama. I didn't have passion for life. It may have been a form of depression. Really? You were depressed? You were depressed. It was hard. It was hard for you dealing with the consequences of your actions. Really? It was hard. It was hard for me to come to reality, to come to grips with the things that I had done. And then, of course, the dumb fuck then marries the girl that he fucking cheats on, that he cheats on his pregnant wife with. So, I mean, yeah, just no surprise there, Tiki Barber. So on top of Tiki Barber being a terrible analyst, he's also just a giant piece of dog shit. Terrible human as well. And he's posting all of these, like, lovey-dovey pictures because, what is it, US Magazine is, like, they're just copying all the pictures from his Instagram, and he has his feet on her lap, and he's like, oh, look at me and my mistress that I cheated on, my pregnant wife with, that I married. I don't really blame the girl, by the way, because, again, she was an intern at NBC. I blame the dumb fuck in fucking Tiki Barber. Jesus Christ. The more I learn about this guy, the more pathetic he is. Oh my God. Anyways, I mentioned the Tiki Barber situation because Saquon Barkley is now a Philadelphia Eagle, and I felt like I was leaving an elephant in the room. Excuse me. Sorry about that. I'm drinking like a bunch of, what is it? Carbonated water. But yeah, I felt like I was leaving something huge out if I didn't talk about it. Here's the thing about Tiki Barber. Or not Tiki Barber. Saquon Barkley. Saquon now is a Philadelphia Eagle. The Eagles have not had issues running the football. That is like the one thing they don't need help on. When Miles Sanders was an Eagle, let me pull up some stats for you. When Miles Sanders was an Eagle, Miles Sanders had, I think, his best season or one of his best seasons that final year in Philadelphia. Miles Sanders, yep, his only 1,000-yard rushing season was the 2022 season in Philadelphia, this year that they went to the Super Bowl. In fact, it was a 1,200-yard season with 11 touchdowns. It got him a big payday in Carolina, where he promptly then had 432 yards and one touchdown, from 1,200 yards and 11 touchdowns to 432 yards and one touchdown. Whoopsies. And then we go to DeAndre Swift. DeAndre Swift's numbers. He's never had a 1,000-yard rushing season in the history of his career, except with the Eagles. So Saquon, if I Google Saquon's numbers, Saquon has had 3,000-yard rushing seasons, his last in 2022. His numbers have been on a decline. He has a lot of touchdowns. He has 35, but maybe not a lot. He has, like, some. But Saquon will probably be back to getting 1,100, maybe 1,200 yards, depending on how good and how fresh he is and how long he plays. Am I banking on the fact that Saquon Barkley can play every single game this season? No, because he really hasn't done that in, what, like 4 or 5 years consistently for more than like a year or 2 years? Maybe even since the start of his career. I don't know. But it is a theme with Saquon that he doesn't play in every single game and that his production has fallen off the last couple of years. However, he's playing with a better team, a better organization, better quarterback, and Jalen Hurts. So yeah, Saquon will be a better running back. But Nick Wright hit the nail on the head. And that was, how exactly does this improve the Eagles when the Eagles' glaring issues are their back end, their
their secondary and kind of their front seven now, right? They're trying to get rid of Hassan Reddick. I don't know why they're trying to get rid of Hassan Reddick. I don't understand why certain teams are trying to get rid of some of like their best pass rushers. I don't understand it. Didn't Hassan Reddick, Hassan Reddick is their best pass rusher, right? Last 2 years with the Eagles, 11 sacks, 16 sacks. He's played with the Eagles two seasons, right? Last 4 years, his splits are 12.5 sacks with the Cardinals in his final season with the Cardinals. His one season with the Panthers, 11 sacks. These last two seasons with the Eagles, 16 and 11. I don't get it. Perennial double-digit guy, awesome pass rusher. I don't get it. I don't understand why he's not getting... I don't understand why, like, the Eagles are like, yep, we're moving on from him. I don't get it. I don't. But that's something that they want to do. That's a plan that they have. That's a tool that they have in their back pocket and they want to do and all that good stuff. They want to move on from Hassan Reddick. But the Eagles, their issues are their inability to cover. We know they can rush the passer, but they can't really cover. And at times, they can't really stop the run either. And at other times, Jalen was really bad last year. Okay? It was definitely because he was hurt, and he'll get a lot of rest this season, and he'll, or this offseason, and he'll come back better than he was at the end of the season. Offensive and defensive coordinators had a cataclysmic disaster of a collapse. The Eagles have Kellen Moore, and they also have Vic Fangio, who they're kind of playing on their last legs, kind of, or in this case, coaching on their last legs. So their coaching should be better. But even then, man, it's just the Eagles, there are just so many question marks around their defense. And defensively, right, like we've talked about free agency, some of the big names are starting to fall off the board. But at the exact same time, the Eagles, they do have a first-round draft pick, and they'll probably use that first-round draft pick on a cornerback. And that'll help solve a lot of those issues in and around their secondary, right? To get, like, one guy that can cover, but then it's just like you look at their division, right? You look at their division, the Giants, more likely than not, are going to draft a wide receiver. That's what they're probably going to do, right? They, like apparently Rich Eisen has reported. Rich Eisen, I hate Rich Eisen sometimes, or any of these big name, interconnected and interwoven NBA, not NBA, I'm watching the NBA right now and I'll comment on it in a second. I hate these like NFL guys that have connections and they just get reports that just aren't true, right? And apparently a report that came out is that the Giants are having buyer's remorse in regards to Daniel Jones, which is true, but apparently it's like the Giants, like it's been implied that the Giants are going to move on from Daniel Jones in the next 2 years, whether it be this year or next year. I will believe it when I see it. I'll believe it. You're going to move on from Daniel Jones? Draft a quarterback this year. You got the pick. This would be the best time in the Giants. You offer a first, two firsts, this year's and next year's for Chicago or for another team. Chicago probably isn't going to move on from their number one overall pick because they're going to use it to draft another player. Right? Another quarterback, probably Caleb Williams. But it's like, for me, if you're going to do all this, you know, posturing and all this gesturing, and you're going to tell me, hey, we're going to take a quarterback or we're going to do it now, if you're the Giants, if you're not scared, if you're not a chicken, but they'll probably draft another wide receiver. Going back to the Eagles and their secondary, right? They're going to draft another guy for their secondary, but the problem is obvious, right? You got CeeDee Lamb in Dallas. You got Jahan Dotson and Terry McLaurin in Washington, and whoever the Giants are going to get with their first-round draft pick. Huge problems for the Eagles. And then it's like you got to replace Jason Kelce. They kind of have already planned for this by having two guards that can play center, and Landon Dickerson, the guard that just got paid $1 billion. It's like if push comes to shove, he can probably just go back to that position. I mean, it's been 4 years since he played that position, but he can probably play it. And then they also got Cam Jurgens, the Nebraska center as well. So they've planned for this for a very long time. They've either had Dickerson or Jurgens that can come in and play that position. But then they also lost Fletcher Cox, who's one of their best defensive tackles on the team. He was better at times than Jordan Davis, who they spent a first-round draft pick on. And so the Eagles have way bigger problems than running back that they can probably pick up in the draft, or they probably could have gotten any one of the frickin' stooges that were up for contract this year. Do I think that Derrick Henry going to Baltimore moves the needle in Baltimore? No, not really, because they had a guy that was like Derrick Henry and Gus the Bus Edwards. They already had a Derrick Henry. It's like, what's the plan? Are we going to feed Derrick Henry a lot of runs here in the next year? I don't think that's necessarily a good idea. I think the plan should be, hey, can we get Lamar Jackson involved more in the passing game? And can we kind of just like leave the running game to the running backs? Some people would say, well, isn't that kind of what Derrick Henry is going to do? It's just like, well, kind of not really. He needs a lot of carries, man. He needs a lot of fucking carries. So if the plan is Derrick Henry is going to be our guy and Derrick Henry is going to really be this freaking dominant back that we're going to have, and he's going to essentially just pop off for a bajillion yards, it's just like, get ready to hand him the football. Lamar would probably appreciate it. We'll see how it works out. But Baltimore, to me, I feel like if you're going to get a running back, get somebody that can be explosive, can take a lot of carries, can do all that. So it's going to be interesting because Derrick Henry will now, for like the first time in his life, get an awesome offensive line. But it's going to be interesting. But it's just like, I don't know. I don't know if the plan is, hey, we're going to have Derrick Henry carry the football, when it's just like, I'd love Lamar having the ball in his hands, whether as a runner or as a passer, but you're trying to diminish Lamar Jackson's carries. You're trying to like make his carries go lower because he's a better passer now, maybe not as a runner. Like, he's still an awesome runner, but he's a good enough passer where you can facilitate your offense through his pass and kind of lean on somebody else to run the football. And my issue with Baltimore for the last couple of years is they've essentially said to Lamar, carry us, do both, you know, like be a quarterback, but also can you get us like 800 yards in rush, you know, last season? Can you also kind of hover around 1,000 yards as well? Because we kind of need it. We kind of don't really have a dominant running back that can get us a lot of yards. Josh Jones or Josh Jacobs, the running back from the Raiders going to the Packers, to me doesn't really do anything. It's a lateral move at best for the Packers. I'm like, okay. And then they released Aaron Jones shortly after, and I was just like, now it is a lateral move. I don't understand why. It's like kind of the same player. In fact, they pretty much are. The only move that I've liked from a team that's kind of up and coming was Xavier McKinney, the former New York Giants safety, stud out of Alabama, from Alabama, who the Giants just stupidly did not re-sign, by the way. Again, another fantastic player that the Giants did not re-sign. Or maybe, I mean, at this point, I think Xavier McKinney may be better than Saquon. But Xavier McKinney, goes to the Packers, replaces Darnell Savage, who the Packers released. And it's just like, I feel like that's a better move than the Josh Jacobs move. But at the exact same time, it's not like a huge needle mover. We'll kind of see what happens with the Packers. And just with free agency as well, the fact that the Chiefs were able to get Chris Jones back as a re-signing, I think is a lot more important than really almost any other re-signing that kind of happened this offseason. It's a huge re-signing. It's important. I was freaking out about it. I was like, oh my God, the Chiefs are done. And then they re-signed him literally when I was on a break, so I couldn't even freaking talk about it whatsoever. Huge, great job by the Chiefs. Important player. I talked about how he was like their most important player on defense, and they got him. They got him back. Anything else from the NFL? Again, there's just not really a lot. There's not really a lot that I'm like, oh, okay, this moved the needle for me on these players. It's just like, on these teams, it's just Washington has had an overall, like, productive offseason. They need to do more next season and in the draft. But overall, it's like they probably aren't going to be the worst team in pro football, thank God. It's kind of hard to do that when you don't have Ron Rivera as your head coach anymore. But they're moving in the right direction. We'll kind of see what happens overall with that team. I'll talk about basketball here for a couple of minutes, and then I'll peace out. So, I said something last week where I was like, I feel like maybe I didn't say it, but I feel like I did. I can't remember everything that I said. But to me, the Lakers, like over the last, like, and this was going back to last week. I was like, last week, I feel like the Lakers are one of the best teams in the West. And I was like, they're the ninth team when it comes to like seeding, or I think at that point in time, they were like the 10th team when it comes to seeding. And I was like, it just doesn't make, like, on paper, it doesn't make any sense, right? Oh my God, the Lakers are like the ninth team or the 10th team or whatever. It's like, that's, like, come on, 24, what are you doing? But if you look at the Lakers, like, games over the last couple of days, it's like Sunday, they beat the Timberwolves, and they beat them badly, 120-109. I mean, it wasn't really a close game. Friday of last week, right? I watched this game. Friday. Bucks at Lakers, 123-122. Lakers. They get blown out, kind of. They have a bad game by the Kings, 130-120. But before that, they beat the one seed in the Thunder, 116-104. They had full control over the Nuggets a couple weeks back, 124-114, but they lost it in the fourth quarter, right? Beat the Clippers February 28th, 116-112. Lose to the Suns, kind of a bad game for them, 113-123. They've beaten good teams, right? They've beaten good teams, and especially over the last couple of weeks, they've beaten the best teams. They've beaten Minnesota. They've beaten the Bucks. They've beaten OKC. They're the ninth seed in the conference. But if you look at the standings, right, it's Lakers at 36 games, and then at 37, and technically it's like the Kings have played 27, or the Kings and the Lakers. The Kings have a better win record, but they have the same amount of wins as the Lakers, right? 36 wins for both teams. Mavericks have 37 wins. Phoenix has 38. Pelicans have 39. Lakers are really, really close right now. They win a couple of those games. They're close to being the sixth seed right now, forcing the Kings or the Mavs or the Suns or whomever to play in the play-in tournament. This would be like one of the first years that the Lakers just haven't played in the play-in tournament. If they do and they get that, like, that week off, or it's just like they don't have to play, they just get to relax before the playoffs. And I said this, I said, like, look, the Lakers, they always have these, like, huge end of season, ironically enough, March Madness runs where they'll pop off at this point in the year, and they'll just beat whoever comes their way. It's kind of disappointing because the Lakers really need, like, one other player that'll help on offense consistently, and LeBron can just either, like, just close out or distribute or whatever. Anthony Davis at times has played great defensively, and they're going to need him to play great defensively because they're probably going to meet up against the Denver Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals. And I feel like last year, once again, it was a sweep for Denver, but it was a way closer series than the box score kind of shows. I felt like the Lakers could win every single game they were in. They just lost it at the end like they did a couple weeks ago. But Lakers, they're the ninth seed right now, a game behind the Mavericks, the Sun. They face off against the Kings here
tomorrow night I'm going to be front row and center, and I'll be talking about the draft. As I watch the Lakers play. But the Lakers are such a fucking great basketball team. Or not a great basketball team, but they're just like a dangerous basketball team. Like when AD actually does what he did against the against the Wolves, right? What was it? Where AD had Anthony Davis. Yeah, he had like 27 points. He had 25 rebounds and like 3 blocks or something like that. He was unfucking stoppable. And I was like, when you get that version of AD instead of whatever AD is on, like, you know, on a fucking like average night or whatever, it's like AD can really help this team be one of the top teams in the West. He really can. But he has to be way more fucking consistent. My God, man. Just be more consistent. And it feels like it's the exact same thing we've been saying about Anthony Davis for like years. It's just like, dude, just be more fucking consistent. My God. It's like you have LeBron. LeBron is like begging him, like, please, AD, just be fucking normal. Just be consistent. Like, help me out. Like, I don't need a lot from you. I just need you to be like a little bit more consistent. My fucking God, help me out. Please help me. Help me, Anthony. And then Anthony's like, I'm going to choke. And he does. But yeah, Lakers, super dangerous team. Watch out for the Lakers in the playoffs. I don't see any of these teams beating the Lakers in any form in the Western Conference playoffs. We will see what happens, though. We will definitely see what happens long term for the Lakers. I mean, I think it's like Denver that can beat them, but we'll see what happens. We'll see what the matchups are looking like. Anyways. Finally. I know I keep saying finally. I know I keep saying like I'll end with this, but I will end with this. March Madness is kicking off, and I'm not going to lie to you. It's already going to be a great month. I myself don't really watch college basketball. I think it's a joke. I think it's a terrible sport for the most part, especially the men's. The women's, though, God damn. Living in a fucking renaissance of women's basketball. I mean, this to me, this shit slaps so hard, so good. We have so many awesome athletes that are coming into the sport, not just professionally, but also in a semi-professional college basketball manner. Women's college basketball, unironically, is one of the only college sports that I can watch and I don't like cringe at, like horrendously. So awesome. Last year's playoffs and championship were awesome with Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark just absolutely going toe-to-toe, battling it out. A couple years ago, it was like Aaliyah Boston and I think it was like Arizona and South Carolina, and South Carolina just beat LSU, and LSU and South Carolina got into a fucking brawl. Oh my God. It was so awesome. Jesus Christ. It's like one of the greatest things to happen in women's sports, and no one is fucking talking about the fucking brawl that happened on Saturday or Sunday or whenever it was in the SEC championship game against the South Carolina. I don't know what they're, what are they, the Warthogs, whatever they are. I don't know what they're called. And the LSU Tigers, go Tigers. Hold on, go Tigers. But it's like it ended in a brawl. LSU kind of lost the game. They get into a fight. They get into a scrum. Awesome for the fucking sport. Right before the tournament or right during the tournament. I don't know anything about March Madness. But it's like in the freaking middle of it, you got Caitlin Clark, who's setting fucking records every single time she fucking plays the sport. And then you got the freaking LSU Tigers with, in my opinion, an all-star fucking track team of top-tier athletes kind of collapsing right before the start of the fucking tournament. It's like, girls, we got to get some shit going here. We got to get some shit popping. They're like, we'll get it popping. We'll get it popping, 24. We'll get this shit popping. And they do get it popping. Sorry. But Man, oh man, how much fun was it? How much fucking fun was that game? God, man. Women's basketball couldn't be at a better place, not only with all of the new athletes that are coming into the sport, but college basketball actually being, like, it's not even, it's no contest. No damn contest. Women's basketball is better. Women's college basketball is better than the men's. I don't even know who, let me put it to you like this. I haven't seen the men's college basketball, and I kind of hoped that it would be swapped, that the women's would be last, and it would be in a primetime slot, and it wouldn't be in fucking broad daylight. Why, like, it should be held at night, and I hope that the NCAA learned their fucking lesson, because the NCAA women's basketball tournament, I didn't even watch the men's. I was like, I'm not watching that. I saw the real champion play. I hope that the NCAA has some sense, makes it at night, makes it so that way the celebrities, the stars can come out and watch damn basketball. Let's get this shit popping. God, I love women's basketball. But yes, it was awesome this weekend. I love the fighting. I love that girls were throwing haymakers. They were throwing hands. They were releasing the jab. Jab, jab, cross. Jab, jab, undercut, cross, hook. They were throwing hooks. They were throwing shit I haven't even seen before in my entire life. I was juiced up about college basketball for the women. They got it popping. The girls got it popping. But yes, college basketball, sorry about that. Women's basketball is back. I'm super stoked on it. I can't wait. I will see you tomorrow. We'll talk draft. We'll talk about the fatties, the fat boys, the offensive linemen here and on Wednesday, because they are important for the draft. They are important for prospects. They are important to understand the scope and the turnout of the draft. I think a lot of great teams are about to get even better. Anyways, I'm peacing out. 24's Podcast.